How's it going, everybody? Wednesday morning, early edition NHL Fantasy on Ice. We're coming at you minutes after the Buffalo Sabres fired coach Ralph Krueger. What's going on, guys? Robbie Reese, myself, Pete Jensen, and guest Chris Wassel. Instant reaction, Robbie, to the firing. I guess the writing was on the wall after they lost to the Devils last night, right?
Well, Chris, I mean, I don't know what you're thinking, but my first reaction was, I don't know how much this changes this season, at least for Buffalo. I guess it looked like Krueger, you know, might have not been a good long-term fit there. But are you seeing any positives from this short-term boost, Chris?
In a word, no. Zero. Zilch. Nothing. There is nothing positive from this. Why do you even make this move? Well, it's the Pegulas. This is like, look, I saw the analogy on Twitter this morning, and there was a couple really good ones. The one was, okay, Buffalo is the Cleveland Browns of the NHL. That was one. The other was the Charlie Brown kicking the football gif. That was is an absolute classic, because this is what the Buffalo Sabres are, unfortunately. They are a complete, utter mess. And there's only one team in the NHL that probably is just as much of a dysfunctional mess, and yet they still have kept a certain assistant, much to the chagrin of many. So yeah, there's nothing positive from this. It's just a short-term move to keep the tank rolling.
I guess some of the most disappointing things that I can say about the Sabres this year is, even when Eichel was in the lineup, they really never gave a true test, Eichel and Hall on the same line. Like, they played it for a few games and then they moved away from it. That was one thing to me that falls on the coach. But then again, you know, the front office of the team came into the season with an improved skater group, or so we thought, but they still didn't have a goalie. And we've seen that so many times, right, guys, in recent years, where an improved team in the offseason comes in hot, you know, based on expectations, and then that glaring weakness always bites you. If you have a bad defense or a bad goaltender, you're not going to make the playoffs in this day and age.
Well, I guess if Eichel was healthy, right, if he wasn't out with an injury, you know, there might be some appeal in buying low on this team right now for the remainder of the season. I mean, I know last year we saw the Kings had a really good rest of season after a bad start, right? Like, this does happen, and there is fantasy value sometimes in those situations, but I would never buy low on a guy like Jeff Skinner right now. Rasmus Ristolainen has had a better season slightly than his plus minus days from a few years ago, but there's really no appeal there, especially I think Taylor Hall too, Pete, as you alluded to. I mean, he took a slap shot off the face in the game last night, which was, I think, just symbolic of how, you know, the entire season for the Sabres in a nutshell. Even a guy like that, you know, on a 1-year deal, if he gets moved at the deadline, I still don't know how high I would reach on that player, Chris.
Yeah, it's a considerable problem. And look, all kidding aside, it was PK Subban who did injure another prominent player last night by indirectly or directly pushing Taylor Hall from behind. But aside from the jokes and such, Buffalo unfortunately has the biggest problem being arguably themselves. The effort was there last night, at least from what I saw, but the execution is just so far gone for a team that has very little confidence. About the only player that I saw that had any kind of, I guess, conviction would be Sam Reinhart. And obviously Buffalo is not trading him anytime soon because he's their most valuable player. There's that. There's the fact that Kevin Adams, obviously the general manager, was thrown literally into the deep end so badly, it just had the rug pulled out from under him, and every other cliche you can insert by the Pegulas. And the problem he has now is trying to clean all this up quickly. And you can't do that in today's NHL, especially with the pandemic still ongoing.
In terms of our rankings for the rest of the season, when you hear that Jack Eichel is out for the foreseeable future, that bumps, you know, all the guys in the equation down or out. I think mostly out, right? Like Sam Reinhart out of the top 100 forwards, Victor Olofsson out, some other guys down the line. I mean, we haven't seen Dahlin. That's the unfortunate thing. Like, Dahlin hasn't even been on the fantasy radar all season. And that is when you're looking at the building blocks for the franchise, or what we thought they would be. There's just not much there anymore. So that's the sad thing, right? Like, at least you knew coming into the year that they had Eichel and Dahlin to build the franchise around. Now you don't feel so good about either of those players. And if the one wants out, then the whole ship might sink.
I wanted to get your thoughts on another storyline from last night, Chris, before we move ahead to today's games. The Colorado Avalanche, I don't know if you caught any of that late game, but they were down big time in the first period. They tried to start Hunter Miska. They couldn't do that. Yanked him. Grubauer comes in, pitches a 40-minute shutout, right? And the Avs go on to win the game. Is that any sort of alarm for you, Chris, that the Avs seemingly are a very good team, but the goaltender position outside of Grubauer leaves some questions?
It's funny because we were talking about this during the game about, I'd say, 10:30, 11 o'clock Eastern time. And I'm going, my God, Miska is absolutely horrendous in net. If Adam Henrique can deke you almost like how Keith Kincaid was deked on Monday night, that's a bad sign. That's really ominous for a goaltender. And all of a sudden, I hear one of my friends going, my God, that sounds like Grubauer's music. And sure enough, I look out and there's Gru. Because of the center ice access that you have now this season, you get pre-commercial break stuff every so often. And there's Grubauer skating around. And it's like, well, where's Miska? Don't see him. Sure enough, he throws the easiest shutout known to man. Anaheim completely goes into the tank. Colorado comes out like a house of cards, scores 6 goals over the final 40 minutes. And you completely forget that this was a 4-2 Anaheim game after the first period. It just goes to the point where, yes, Colorado absolutely needs to know what is going on with Pavel Francouz, for a lack of a better term. He hasn't played all season. Nobody knows if he's going to. The circumstances are secretive at best. I mean, this isn't the CIA or FBI. We should know something at this point, but we do not. And that just begs the question, what do you do if you're Colorado? And unfortunately now, with Antti Raanta getting injured for the 100 billionth time yesterday, not Scorpion, not car accident, not there's too many. But the bottom line is this. You have limited options for a team that definitely needs a backup goaltender. I can't see Francouz returning during the regular season. And if he does, hey, Colorado has some news that I don't know. And we just chalk it up to, hey, I was wrong.
Yeah, in our main joint league, me and Robbie have been stashing Pavel Francouz for the entire season, just hoping for an update or something. But anyway, in one of my other leagues, I have Grubauer, and he's been by far and away the MVP of that team. He's got 4 shutouts on the season, tied for the league lead with Fleury, and then had that 40-minute shutout that Robbie said doesn't count in the column, but still helps you, get the win and the peripherals. And I mean, I guess, is this a good time to talk about who's your goalie MVP at the first half of the season? Is it Fleury? Is it Grubauer? Is it Varlamov? Is it the safe pick, Andrei Vasilevskiy, who's been unreal this year, even without Nikita Kucherov, top offensive player for the entire season? Who do you guys like the most?
Well, I'll let Chris go first. I have my answer ready in the queue.
I mean, look, I have my dice ready at this point, and I'm rolling fully here on Marc-Andre Fleury, because look, the numbers are outstanding. There's other options. I understand that. There's lots of other options that you could consider in this. Not from Florida, not from Carolina, or the James Reimer guide on how to win without really being good. But all kidding aside, Fleury, along with a stingy and ridiculously stingy at times Vegas defense, is doing this at almost 36 years old. And his record on the back end of back-to-backs is more astounding than anyone else's in the league. It's an amazing number. It's ridiculous. He basically is producing a goal saved above average at almost 1 goal saved more per start. Again, this feels like the certain playoff expansion year once again, where he got off on the start where he had 15 goals saved above average and 14 starts. Can he continue it? I don't know. I don't have the answer to that one. And even with guys like Vasilevskiy, I expect some regression. It's coming. Look, Tampa Bay cannot maintain the number one team defense in the NHL. And if they do, well, it's because they played a 56-game schedule. It's the excuse I'm going with at this point. Go ahead, Rob.
I'm going to just double down on Fleury there, Chris. I think when we look to Pete at the landscape coming into this season, Lehner in the playoffs for Vegas last year had 9 wins, including 4 shutouts. He was by far and away the clear-cut number one guy. He signed the new deal. Now, there were rumblings that he wasn't fully healthy coming into the season. At that point, you could start to raise the alarm. Uh-oh, what is Vegas going to do? They didn't need to do anything. Marc-Andre Fleury is a top 5 goaltender in this league. He has been almost since he entered the league as a 19-year-old rookie way back in the day. And honestly, I just think that his performance night in and night out, even against quality clubs, has been something to behold. You look at Varlamov for the New York Islanders. Well, you could say their team defense is so sound, right? And Varlamov, credit to him too. But I think it's Marc-Andre Fleury. As you mentioned, 36 years old, Chris, you know, doesn't seem to be aging at all in this NHL. Now, if he gets to the playoffs, is he going to have a bad game here or there and the fans are going to come out wanting Lehner? Yes, that will happen. That happens to Marc-Andre Fleury. It has in his career. We've seen that. But regular season, fantasy-wise, Pete, it's got to be Marc-Andre.
And when you look at ADP for fantasy purposes, I mean, Fleury's ADP was 92.5. I mean, what is he, a top 10 overall player right now? And I know Varlamov and Sorokin's ADPs were a lot lower than we expected. So you can make a case there. And of course the Islanders dropped the game against the Capitals. That was their only bad game in the past month, it seems. I mean, they had previously won 9 in a row and they've just been chugging along and, you know, quietly leading that division. But yeah, definitely Fleury has been the biggest surprise, especially how it went in the playoffs last year with all the, you know, the backstabbing memes and everything by the agent and stuff. I mean, it's been, we knew that they had the best goalie tandem coming into the season, but I don't know that you can argue against Fleury as goalie MVP, you know, even as Vasilevskiy and the Lightning continue to take care of business most nights. That was a really fun game to watch last night and good to see the best out of Dallas too and their response late in that game. From Ottinger to Robertson having 2 assists and Radulov scoring the tying goal, you saw a little positivity in that group, a hard-earned point, and maybe, guys, something that this team can finally build off of.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the good news. I mean, they need something to build off of. It just depends on how high the ceiling is for the remainder of the season. That's always one thing, you know, I think about, too. It's like you can make a big statement like that. You can win a big game. But then how high can you go from there? That's the one thing that remains to be seen. Chris, I do want to ask about fantasy disappointments, though. That's one of the ones where I look at a couple of my fantasy rosters and I'm thinking, okay, I might be doing okay in the standings, but if that one player would have hit, I could have been doing so much better. The one guy I'm going to throw out there is Mika Zibanejad of the Rangers. Now, coming into the season, we said on this program, he's not going to be a 40-goal guy. He could be. It's unlikely. But the regression that we saw out of him to only have 3 goals and 8 assists, he's a -5 too, to this point in the season, you're getting next to nothing there unless you're in a faceoffs league.
Okay, I'm going to be the relative meanie in the room because I kind of sort of predicted that he was going to have a very long season and it's not because of what people expected. Unfortunately, the reality is, can you completely blame his start to the lingering effects of the coronavirus that he did wind up getting? That's a great question. And I don't have an honest answer for it because, look, it's affected so many people in a myriad of ways that we just do not have enough information on. But it had at least a tangible effect. Now, the biggest part of his game that dropped is the mental aspect of the game. It completely plummeted. The minute he started, look, there was a Devils Rangers game at the beginning of the season where Zibanejad missed about 3 or 4 quality chances And I said it then, I'm like, oh my dear God, this is going to be one long season for him. It's going to take probably take almost half the season for him to get started. And even then it might be too late. And sure enough, that's kind of what has happened. He went the first 15, 20 games with maybe 4 points. Mm-hmm. And I think like one or two goals. I mean, that is a long time for a guy who, let's face it, is probably a 25 to 30 goal scorer over an 82 game season to go when it comes to producing points. And the chances have been there. It's not like they haven't been. And the power play chances have been there too. And yes, there's been players missing, but this Rangers team got off to, I think the first 16 games, they were averaging 2.5 goals a game offensively. That's not going to cut it, especially with the young roster they have. And oddly enough, in that time, the Rangers defense, which you would have expected to completely capitulate like a game of Stratego, didn't. They were only averaging 2.6 allowed a game and were able to stay in it. And now that's, of course, is due to injuries and such, is slowly flipping back to the Rangers we expect. So look, is he a guy in the second half that you probably want to have? Yes. Are you going to get that top production, though, that you got last year? Nowhere close.
Good point, Chris, for sure, about some of the health effects and how it might have impacted his production. He also didn't have he didn't really have a training camp at all, which we've talked about. But it's at least been good to see Zibanejad, 8 points in his past 12 games. Now they get Panarin back. Now the top six can kind of settle in. Strom played really well with Kreider during Panarin's absence, and now Strom is back with Panarin. And that will help Zibanejad in the second half, like Chris alluded to, having Panarin, the bread man, elite playmaker, you know, dishing it off, and he'll be the finisher. So I really like that trend for sure if you're buying low. Shesterkin also, like, he was a big reason for them keeping games low scoring earlier in the season. He's still not back yet. So maybe there's an extra layer when Shesty comes back. You know, I think the Ranger forward group as a result of Panarin, a little bit more appealing here for the rest of the season. And we saw them play a high scoring game against the Flyers the other day. The offense looked alive and well for once. So that was good to see.
I guess one thing too, not to get too far ahead of ourselves, but organizationally, if you think Mika Zibanejad might be more of a second line center, now I don't know how they're viewing the situation, but I'm just speaking in terms of fantasy. Do you think that they might try and go out and try and solidify the center position, Chris? Because probably not before the trade deadline this year, they're probably going to write off the season, but something to keep an eye on the offseason, because look at Strom. I mean, as Pete alluded to, like, this is a pretty quality guy, but it doesn't seem like in the playoffs, that's going to win you the championship, Chris. That's not going to hoist you the Stanley Cup. And Mika Zibanejad, as we saw last playoffs, if he's not scoring a goal per game, or if he's not having a 5-goal outing against the Washington Capitals, I don't know if you're winning a series with him either. I don't think he's at the level of a Malkin, who, by the way, exited the game last night on a kind of freakish looking injury, Chris. So we'll talk about that too, but maybe that's just a trend. Again, not to get ahead of ourselves here, but to keep an eye on for the Rangers.
Yeah, it's almost like, what is with these freaky injuries of late in the end? Okay, all right. I'm getting ahead of myself again. But with Zibanejad in particular, I don't think he ever necessarily was a first-line center. He just happened to get on this run last year where his offensive production so outweighed any deficiencies that basically he was your go-to guy. You rode him into the ditch no matter how. And unfortunately, during that 3-game, I guess, cameo in the play-in round against the Carolina Hurricanes, we saw what a defensive team like, or a team that can counter like the Carolina Hurricanes, could do with the Zibanejad line. And it was a little bit of a harbinger of things to come, but you never expected this. Now, what do? You need a first-line center. If you're the Rangers, you need a first line center. You can't do it during this trade deadline. You have to remember there's still several years of flat cap. That's the cold reality of the NHL now. And unfortunately, no matter what revenue streams additionally may come in, we're in a flat cap phase where you have to be very careful on what you spend. Do they go after a Jack Eichel? They could in the summer, but there's going to be other options, I believe, that are available. I know the Rangers, some Ranger fans want Eichel. I understand that. It's a beautiful pipe dream. There's just, you just have, so you're going to have so many choices out there. Don't do it. Don't pull the trigger on this. Please don't do it. I beg of you. And it's not that Jack Eichel is a bad guy. It's just, you could see where things could go south in New York City very quickly with a guy making $10 million AAV.
Fair enough. I mean, if they can swing a trade to get Jack Eichel, it would be definitely lucrative. You see them have some prospects that haven't panned out. Some, you know, maybe they can move some money around. That it may be a pipe dream, but like, I feel like that's like the short list of teams that like Eichel would probably want to go to. It's just like my gut feeling. But anyway, yeah, if they could somehow land him, that would be incredible. But yeah, I think like, for the Rangers and the other thing with them that I wanted to mention, like, and right, they get Panarin back, they beat the Bruins 4-0 over the weekend, and then all of a sudden, like, Adam Fox and Buchnevich are on the COVID list. Like, are you kidding me? Is everything I'm not a Ranger fan, but like, is everything working against this team this year? It's been insane, right?
I mean, you could argue that, you can ask the question from some fantasy owners. It's like, and they've said it. It's like, is there some kind of spiritual deity that is working against my fantasy team? And I've seen it from people there. The questions are constant. It's like, I had one guy last night, he's in a high stakes league. And he's like, Chris, I'm writing my season off halfway through. I've won the championship 3 straight years. With, you know, NHL.com's guidance, your guidance, et cetera. And he's like, I can't do anything right. He's like, no matter what, his equivalent was this. I'm in quicksand. The more moves I make, the more I sink in the standings. And literally, as he said, it was because of, this player is now on the COVID protocol. This guy got hit by a freak puck in the head and he has a sinus canal fracture. And now he's out for another 3 weeks. Rob, go ahead. Cause this is going to be fun.
No, it's, I've had that too many times, Chris. And I think this season, while we're talking about midseason awards and everything, it's like this season, I was way quicker to the draw about cutting a guy. I mean, I have 2 IR plus spots in one league. And when the COVID, you know, protocol was really ramped up in the beginning of the season, and I had 2 guys on the protocol on IR, I would just drop the guy that was underperforming, right? I held on to guys like Jack Hughes for a little bit longer than I probably should have just because of the early season performance. But then when they, you know, flame out a little bit, then you got to make the cut. So injuries this year was certainly a storyline. I do want to talk about surprises though, because, you know, if you drafted a guy, let's look at left wing in particular, Alex DeBrincat outside the top 100, 29 points in 26 games, Andre Palat outside the top 100, 27 points in 28 games. I mean, you really cashed in big time. Was there anybody on your fantasy squad? One of them, Chris, I'm sure there's many teams, but one guy in particular that stood out to you was a nice surprise.
The biggest one for me, only because it's not that he wasn't very good last year, and arguably he might've had a better defensive year last season, but it undoubtedly has to be Jeff Petrie. Now, look, I don't know how long Jeff Petrie is going to be shooting at 15.7%. I mean, he has 11 goals on about 70 shots. It is the most hysterical thing, but I had somebody from Montreal last night. I think it was Andrew Berkshire actually. And we both said the same thing. This guy has the craziest knack of getting pucks to the goalie that are at less than 50 miles per hour that create rebounds in the NHL since Peter Harrell. I don't know what it is. There's some magical quality, but he finds a way to get shots through and opportunities. And he may be I can't even call him a dark horse pick for the Norris anymore because he was so good last year and he was so underrated that people hopped on him quickly, like within a week this season. So there's obviously him. The other surprise, and for a lack of a better term, because I was wrong about the entire Kings first line, and I'm just going to sort of like hang my head in absolute shame, along with Drew Doughty. Now, look, Drew Doughty still gets trucked like a 300-year-old sometimes, by Nathan MacKinnon on an often basis, but for fantasy purposes, his production has been something else. It's fascinating to watch. It's almost like you're watching a renaissance in LA. And I can't forget to mention Alex Iafallo being, for lack of a better term, LA's version of Zach Hyman, basically, where he creates a lot of space. He may not be as big as Hyman. He may not take up as much space in front of the net, but he's effective. And he gets points that way. Obviously, Adrian Kempe has been just an absolute surprise for LA this year. It's not that he didn't have the talent. He just had the time to develop. And then along those lines, I mean, we can go into disappointments later, though. So I'll let Rob and Pete take the floor on this one.
Yeah, so some of our surprises in our article, Midseason Awards, NHL.com/fantasy. We mentioned DeBrinket. There's also guys like Andre Palat and Patrick Hornquist and Vincent Trocheck even. I know Trocheck's been injured recently, and Jordan Staal's kind of taken that 2C role and run with it. But the way, like, you look at their Yahoo performance-based rankings for those three guys, those category cogs, and right, Ravi, you mentioned it last show, I think. Like, that's where the fantasy landscape is trending, because those guys get you the floor, even when, right, even like Josh Anderson, even when he's not scoring goals, he gets you the floor. And then when he rattles off 5 goals in 7 games or something like that, then he wins you your weekly matchup because of the hits, because of the shots. And that's what all those different guys that I just mentioned cover. They all cover hits.
I'm hoping to have the wraparound pick in my draft next year, so I can take Brady Tkachuk in the last pick of the first round, Matthew Tkachuk in the first pick of the second round, and just take grinders the whole time, because this year more than ever, you need category coverage every single night. Like Pete said, I mean, it's so important. I think in an 82 game seasons, you always want to have the high upside point guy. Always. You can forego the hits. You can forego, you know, some of the other stuff, plus minus, even you can overlook depending on the situation, but category coverage, including shots and hits, is so imperative. And I think this season, this 56 game season, has really shifted my perspective on drafting and fantasy. And I think it's going to be a major offseason storyline that we'll be talking about, just because you need security. I mean, I'll throw this out to you, Chris. I turned down a trade where someone offered me Braden Point for my Matthew Tkachuk, and I instantly rejected it because I want Matthew Tkachuk's category coverage. Braden Point's a phenomenal player. He's certainly more talented and more skilled than Tkachuk. But in fantasy, I need the security, even on a lesser Flames team, of having a guy every night that's on the score sheet, whether it's just a couple hits or some shots.
Yeah, the rotisserie across the board aspect of fantasy takes total precedence this season, and it probably will for the next few seasons, to be honest, just because of what we're seeing as far as not just the fantasy hockey landscape, but the hockey landscape as well. Think about this for a second. Yeah, Braden Point's a great player. Braden Point can get you over a point a game. There's one problem. Braden Point can go on a run where he has 15 shots in 4 games, and then he can go on a run where he has 15 shots in about 10 or 11 games. And then his hits and blocks, those are just like, that's not much. But I can get one of the Tkachuks, and I saw this the other night, the Tkachuk brothers analysis on Sportsnet, and it was something that appeared very amusing at first, but the more you read into it, the more it made sense. I mean, you have Tkachuk, who is one of the league leaders in shots on goal per game, and over the last 10 games, I think he's averaging almost 4.5. He's like mini Ovechkin. With how he generates shots on net and the angles that he generates, very much like a younger Ovechkin used to. I think people forget that a little bit. But he's on an up-and-coming team in Ottawa, obviously, senior Brady Tkachuk. And you can't forget Matthew Tkachuk because of all the intangibles that he brings as well. And it's a heck of an idea, the float for people in fantasy, especially for next season. I can't believe I'm saying this, but yes, the Tkachuk brothers are actually very much fantasy viable in just about every league. And in rotisserie leagues this year, which is one of the few aspects I'm doing really well in this year, unlike some other leagues where it's just gone so far south that you couldn't even dig yourself out if you had a lifeline. Guys like the Tkachuks, the Josh Andersons of the world, even Chris Kreider at times when, you know, he's producing at a ridiculous goal rate. Zach Hyman, I mean, Alex Iafallo, I could keep going. These are guys that are producing at a reasonable volume. And of course, Connor Christmas Garland, much to the chagrin of Craig Morgan, before the injuries. And yes, unfortunately, he has a lingering injury that is going to hamper him. So do not pick him up in fantasy for the foreseeable future. But guys like that, that create space with their speed and their power and their acceleration, are guys that you're going to need going forward, as opposed to these high volume point guys that don't produce much else.
We always say it. It's like that hits league draft guide that we do at the beginning of the season, where we pretty much pinpoint anybody that, you know, gets you a hit or more per game. Any of the guys that get you 1.5 or more, like if you just kind of like throw those guys into your queue along the way, Robbie, that's why we've done so well in that experts rotisserie league that we're in. We just moved into first place out of 12 teams. And like, that's a league where we have Tkachuk. We have Jake Gensel, who gets you like about a hit per game. And I think we also have Barkov in that league. He doesn't cover hits, but he's one of the top 10 players in the game right now. But yeah, it's just like a fun strategy. It's worked well for us. And that's where you should look on the waiver wire for help if there's any guys that cover hits. In terms of waiver wire, like Chris, I know it's crucial right now around the midway point in the season. One guy that came to mind for me that we picked up in that league, me and Robbie, Matt Grizzlick, what he's doing to cut into Charlie McAvoy's time on the first power play and really that offensive production. You know, like since he came back from injury, he's taken over the offensive role on the Bruins, and he's got like 5 points in his past 7 games and 4 on the power play. What do you think of Grizzlick? Like, is he going to really chop into McAvoy's fantasy value for the rest of the season?
He's done this from the beginning of the season, guys. And this is not something that's been unheard of with this Bruce Cassidy coach team, where he's found a way, or a niche, if you will, that unfortunately for McAvoy owners, drags down his value. That's the reality. But the bottom line is, this is a young player from Boston when healthy. And again, he has a little bit of an injury issue and such that keeps him from achieving even more as far as points. But again, another guy that finds a way to get his shot through from the point, and that creates opportunities. And that's something where, as much as McAvoy has a booming shot, his shot often gets blocked, altered, et cetera. Whereas Grzelczyk, he finds a way to get things through, and he has a little bit better vision on that top unit power play than a McAvoy. And that pays huge dividends for Boston.
Well, and they got the win with Dan Vlader starting. He made 30 plus saves in that game. Pittsburgh actually played fine too. Now the Malkin injury is a little bit concerning for the rest of the season for that team. Malkin was playing so well after a rough start. Kapanen on that line looked to form great chemistry. He had an assist last night, so do not drop Kapanen yet until we get a Malkin prognosis. But that's one of those injuries, guys. I was watching that game, and it just sounded bad. It just sounded like something went wrong. And it was weird because it looked like it was fine. It didn't look like a horrible hit, but the sound, it just didn't, I don't know. I hope that Malkin's all right, because if he misses time, I don't think that Penguins team has the horses, Pete, to stay in that East Division race, especially if Philadelphia finds any help in net, whether Carter Hart starts playing better, whether Moose, Brian Elliott starts playing better. They could find themselves the odd man out this time around.
Yeah, and the bottom six for Pittsburgh is so much worse than it was, you know, 3-4 years ago, where you could lose a guy like Crosby for a month or lose Malkin for a couple of weeks and survive it. I know they still survive it last year, but that was kind of like an aberration. I think it caught up to them in the playoffs when they were quickly dismissed by Montreal. Another one of those teams that last year, based on the season, didn't really deserve to be there, but took advantage of a banged up Pittsburgh team and that pause and stuff like that. But yeah, this could definitely derail the train, I think, if Malkin misses some time. And I would probably say that because Kapanen does not see much power play action or production, You would probably end up dropping him eventually if Malkin does miss time. Not to be a downer here, because Kapanen has been one of the most valuable players in fantasy. But if there's somebody out there and you hear that Malkin, you know, after we finish the show today, that Malkin's going to miss some time, you'd probably make that move right now, unfortunately.
You almost absolutely have to at this point, guys. Here's the problem I have with what happened last night. That looked completely like a freak incident. It really did, unfortunately. And that was my concern. You heard it and you saw it wasn't that bad, but then in the back of your head, you're like, uh-oh. Now, sometimes that looks like the case and a player doesn't even miss a shift or miss a game. And it's so, but in some cases, unfortunately, that's a season ending injury. And until we know, I hold on to guys like Kapanen. I wait and see what happens to, you know, how fast does a guy like Jarrett McCann come back? I'm at least looking around the landscape a little bit, but at this point I have one eye on that and I have the other eye on the waiver wire.
Well, I'll throw out two more names on the waiver wire that you should absolutely add today. And just to preface, I think the only reason we're talking about Malkin in that sense is because this player hasn't played a full season since 2008, 2009. So the only reason we're even talking about is if it could be serious, we don't know, just to clarify. But if it is, this player has the injury history. That's why I wanted to bring it up. For two waiver wire additions, I like Josh Morrissey a lot for the Winnipeg Jets. I think Petey said it on the last show. Teams that have two or three defensemen in the top 50 defenseman rankings are usually pretty darn good clubs. Josh Morrissey joined those ranks again. Certainly going to return some value for the rest of the season. And then another guy on a team that's not so hot, the Nashville Predators, Matthias Ekholm, very quality player, seeing a lot more ice time now that Ryan Ellis is out with injury. Roman Josi is out with injury. He could get also moved to a contender. That would solidify him as a very valuable asset for the fantasy playoffs.
Yeah, a couple other defensemen too that are have been really valuable lately. I know we talked about Mackenzie Weegar the past couple of shows, but just wanted to also mention that he's playing with Aaron Ekblad, who's playing at a defenseman fantasy MVP type level this season and a Norris contending level. So if when you see Weegar with a 5-game point streak and covering almost every category across the board, I saw he's like plus 10 on the season. Like that could be sustainable because of the exposure that he has at even strength. It's not like just a complete outlier that's going to cool off if you're playing, right? We've seen so many times through the years, the guy that's paired up with an elite defenseman, like, right, even like Shattenkirk last year, his career was in the tank and then he gets paired up with Victor Hedman and all of a sudden he turns it around, is a playoff hero and, you know, gets a big contract with the Anaheim Ducks. So whether he's worth it or not, it's just a good development for sure for Weegar. And then the other guy who's kind of like a hidden gem right now that I've liked for a few years, Philip Hronek, is red hot for the Detroit Red Wings. And that's a team that looks completely different when they have Dylan Larkin in the lineup. We saw a 3-point game from Hronek, a couple of multi-point games. I think three of his past four games, he's had multiple points. And he leads the Red Wings in scoring. I mean, that's kind of sad for a defenseman, but like if there's nothing else out there on defense, he's not like minus 40 like he was last year. He's like minus 10 or 12 or something. He's racking up the points lately.
And Detroit at home actually is not that bad. I mean, yeah, they give up a ton of shots and Jonathan Bernier is probably wondering like, what was I thinking here? But offensively, at least they do look a little better when Larkin is engaged in the game and he's not like going down Jeff Blashill's throat to death because of utilization and being driven crazy. He's an extremely gifted player. And unfortunately he's just not quite surrounded with the talent that he needs, you know, for Detroit to maintain that competitiveness, not just at home, but on the road as well. But you see bits and pieces again, like the last few games where it's like, hey, this team's not so bad. I mean, Vladimir Nemestikov, not the greatest top six player, but occasionally will get you some production. You look at Zadina, who's been a nice player, particularly in the last 10 to 15 games for Detroit. And then obviously Ronick, who I've been hiding all year because I just didn't want people like to try and snipe him off waiver wire because they had a better priority than I did, to be honest. And again, has that decent enough floor that seems to be improving, much like a guy I may eventually allude to at some point named Ivan Provorov, who may be starting to look like the player we saw a couple seasons ago, who's finally getting back to that level that we were used to seeing. And then and it seems like a cyclical nature of these guys, some of these guys, like even Aronic, who just fell off the board last year, magically are having these seasons this year for whatever reason that are way better than we expect. And maybe it's on us to a point, because you get conditioned to seeing these guys falter and you just assume that there's a logical curve downward. But sometimes every so often you get that boost up.
And let's not forget that at Roenick in a keeper league is mega valuable, because this Red Wings team is going to get a lot better. Petey said it, Larkin in the lineup is everything that they need. And then this summer, I mean, they've got a great general manager in Stevie Y. He's going to have that team in the right position. And just imagine what Roenick would be with a little bit more insulation around him. Now, I do want to talk about the slate Wednesday night. There is so much value that I will be pulling out the sledgehammer tonight. I'm going to get right into it with the Edmonton Oilers plus 100 against the Calgary Flames. This Oilers team, Connor McDavid, Leon Draisaitl, unbelievable talents. They will not want to drop back-to-back in the Battle of Alberta. Despite what Daryl Sutter said about him not being concerned about this matchup this year, I don't know what he meant by that, but this is a major game, even if you don't live in Alberta. And I like Edmonton a lot. I think they're going to respond nicely, especially if Mike Smith gets the nod.
I like that pick for sure. There is some great value on the slate. I mean, look at the Sharks played the Golden Knights tight the other day. They played them tight in that other game that went to overtime. The Sharks have been good coming off a loss this year. As much as they've, they have a sub 500 record, they don't lose consecutive games that often. And they're plus 200 underdogs against the Golden Knights, who are without Petrangelo. You assume they're going to start Fleury. Vegas is probably going to win that game, but like, I just like that value plus 200 for a, it's not a toss up game. They are the underdog, but there is some value on the Sharks, and we've seen them much better with Meyer and Carlson and Hurdle healthy. So just be aware of that. It was unfortunate for James to not get a chance at the sledgehammer the other day after they postponed the Blues and Kings, but those teams get back in action today. And the Kings plus 120, they're not as big of a dog as they were the other day, but Kings have some bounce back appeal for sure.
Robbie with the Edmonton pick, I like it also. That's a good one. That's a good one. Personal little shekel on the Edmonton Oilers. That game was back and forth the other night, and you're right. I would think a split, just like Boston and Pittsburgh split, I could see a split here. Christopher, don't feel pressure for a sledgehammer. Don't feel that pressure. if it's not there, if you don't see it, then don't say anything. But what do you like on the board?
There's lots of fun options here. One of them is I cannot see Thatcher Demko stopping 467 shots again. At some point, this has to break, like it often does with him, about once every five starts. Look, the Ottawa Senators fired more shots on goal than I could count the other night. And I swear the scorekeeper just lost count and said, I give up at one point. You tip your hat to Demko, but at some juncture, this Vancouver defense is an absolute sieve. And I like what I see from Ottawa, obviously, Brady Tkachuk aside. And that value tonight is at least there, at least for now. This could change, because I've watched it happen with some of these picks of late, but I am going to go with the almighty sledge, much like I did last night when I pulled out the Buffalo +1.5, a live game out of nowhere. We are going with Ottawa straight up on the money line tonight.
And that's a sledge?
That is my sledge tonight. Oh. I want to see Vancouver fall hard.
I didn't think I'd live to see the day where a sledgehammer is on Ottawa, but Christopher Wassel taking a chance. All right, I got to keep the standings. You're looking for your first sledgehammer win of the season, and it's going to be the Ottawa Senators. Sleep well tonight if it hits. Sleep well.
Hey, I like to take some risks here. It's bad enough I can sit there and count the Battle of Alberta and go, okay, it's going to hit seven, and boom, it hit seven. But that was the best example the other night. I had a guy panicking, no goals early. Mm-hmm. I thought you said this is going to hit. And I'm like, wait. Now, in the span of an hour, which basically was from the end of the first period to early in the third, it went from basically just about scoreless to 3-3 in about 55 minutes of real time. Guy DMs me back. He's one of the leading handicappers in Vegas and just goes, something wrong with you. There really is. You are way too degenerative when it comes to these things. It's probably a good thing you bet small amounts for that reason. End quote.
Well, I mean, yeah, when you see that Vancouver, as much as they're trending up lately, 5-1-0 without Pettersson, and you see that and you're like, how can you explain that this is happening when they had such a horrible start to the season and it's so much on the goaltender, Demko? I mean, that's evidence that will eventually break, like you said, Chris. So I like the confidence with that pick of Ottawa. And sticking in the North, before we let you go, who do you like the most for that final playoff spot in the North Division? We've talked at length about it, but wanted to get your take because so many people are either buying low in fantasy, there have been coaching changes, they're betting on the playoff futures to try to get some value. Who do you like out of Montreal, Calgary, or Vancouver for that final spot in the North?
I mean, at least until further notice, or what I see some magic of consistency from Calgary that I really haven't seen all year, even with Daryl Sutter now coaching this team. It has to be the Montreal Canadiens because we finally have gotten the Carey Price that most of us are used to. I mean, there was a stat the I think maybe Monday after Monday night's game on Sportsnet that had save percentages of goalies this far into their career. And Carey Price was top five all time in save percentage. Now that isn't the end all and be all of stats. That's just not how it goes. But it does speak volumes of how relatively durable he has been in that one statistic. Now, over the last six games, five of those after a certain goalie coach was fired mid game, Price has responded. He's 4-1-1. His save percentage is over 950. His goals against average is below two. The more important thing in these numbers are this fact. The Montreal Canadiens over the last four games have drastically limited the scoring chances against. It's not just an issue of them limiting shots on goal. They limited scoring chances against. They limited penalties taken. Let's face it, that penalty kill is brutal. I mean, it's partially why Carey Price's penalty kill save percentage is 816. League average is about 870 for perspective. This was the constant Henrik Lundqvist argument that we had for about a decade in the tri-state area and in fantasy circles, where his numbers would just go up and down and all over the place, and you couldn't figure out what it was a product of. It's the same thing with Price. Sometimes it's just a weird number, but this year in particular, Montreal's penalty kill, whether it's a structural thing or whether it's Price himself and teams are exposing his low glove side a little bit much. The bottom line is he's now producing. And against a team like Winnipeg tonight, he's probably going to continue to produce, much like some other players on that team. Like Tyler Toffoli may have a new whipping team in the Winnipeg Jets, 6 points in the last three games against them. But it's the idea that Montreal just is better stacked from top to bottom than Calgary and Vancouver right now. It's just they have to find a way to get their special teams sort of that giddy up and ride to the finish line. And the power play has improved. It is around 20% over the last 10 or 12 games. They're getting there at least. Whereas some of the other teams like Calgary and Vancouver just have too many glaring weaknesses to overcome Montreal right now.
Two things here. The first, Thatcher Demko has faced a league high 709 shots. That is 101 more shots faced than Matt Murray from the Ottawa Senators, who, oh, by the way, has played an additional game than Thatcher Demko. That is horrific if you are the Vancouver Canucks. There is no way that team should be in the playoffs with that kind of stat line. It should not happen. Now, give credit to Demko, though, for having a 920 with all that. Very, very impressive. The second thing, you mentioned the Montreal penalty kill. Imagine that that team got matched up, whether it's against the Toronto Maple Leafs, who have a lethal power play, or they somehow found themselves against the Tampa Bay or Washington or a Boston with lethal power plays in the postseason. That would be four games and back to Montreal. So it's really a storyline that you can take advantage of in the regular season, though, too. Look at the Winnipeg Jets power play, 27% right now. Pretty darn good. Paul Stastny's on that top unit, which I like a lot. Petey does, too. I think you might put a little bit on Winnipeg tonight. Home dogs against Montreal. Just play the power play matchups. That, now that we've seen these trends stabilize, Chris, we're halfway through the season here. That power play penalty kill is going to be one of the better ways to bet, in my opinion, for the remainder of the season.
Yeah, did you see Kyle Connor's shot the other night? Not the first goal, but the second goal. And it almost, you saw the frustration on the Montreal bench, like, we saw that coming and it didn't matter. That's how good of a shot that Kyle Connor has. And Carey Price said it. He's like, look, the two goals I gave up on Winnipeg's, there was nothing I could do. I mean, he actually like stuttered midway through and stopped and just said, there was nothing I could do, particularly on the second shot. He's like, I'm not stopping that. And I don't think 99 out of 100 goaltenders are stopping that shot just because. And it's, you could see it coming and it doesn't matter because his follow through is that much better than I would say all but maybe two, maybe three NHL players on their one timer in particular.
Yeah, I get your point for sure, Chris. I agree with you about the, you know, rest of the season appeal with Montreal compared to those other teams. But when I first looked at this slate tonight and I saw the Jets are underdogs against Montreal after they just lost to them, that to me, the fact that there's any value on Winnipeg, I think that they're going to bounce back tonight. And I will pull out the sledgehammer on the Winnipeg Jets. I haven't done it in a while. Winnipeg Jets plus 100 against Montreal. Although, you know, Price has looked a little better, that team still has some flaws. So give me Winnipeg against Montreal tonight. I can't believe that they're underdogs.
It's crazy. I mean, I guess the only explanation there is that the coaching change for Montreal has seemed to benefit them. Tyler Toffoli remains hot, and Nick Suzuki got on the score sheet finally for fantasy owners that were panicking after his past 11 games of like 3 points or something, and me included. I'm not going to lie, I'm in that crowd too. I have both Toffoli and Suzuki, so I'm really counting on the Habs, Chris. Hopefully you're right on the money about them making the postseason, because I need those guys to stay hot to win a championship this year.
Oh, absolutely. I think they'll hold on and make it, but to say it's going to be an easy road for them, you cannot say that. It's going to be a bumpy ride, a back and forth. And everybody knows the Montreal media and how they are. It's lots of fun.
And before we sign off, just three key injury notes or lineup notes. Jaden Schwartz could come back on Wednesday for the Blues. That makes a deep offense even deeper. Tom Wilson, that March 20th timeline after his suspension, that's coming up this weekend. So pick up Tom Wilson now. He might be back for you on Saturday, which is a good sign. Washington, two great games this week. That offense really coming back into form now. Even Kuznetsov looks really good for them. And then Cale Makar for the Avalanche, who have looked really strong. They dropped an 8th spot on the Ducks yesterday. They will now get Cale Makar back eventually. He was skating with the normal practice jersey. So those are three guys, Schwartz, Tom Wilson, Cale Makar, that could shift the fantasy landscape over the course of the upcoming week. But yeah, Robbie, one thing.
Real quick, Chris, I would trade Jeff Petrie right now for Cale Makar. Do it while you still can. Even Aaron Ekblad, I could be talked into doing that for Makar too. Watch the Avs against the Ducks in the last few periods. Just watch the highlights. Look at some of the goals they're scoring. Makar is going to be the one setting up half of those one-timers.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, look, we joke about this, but Makar was just straight near a point a game before the injury. And he has one of the best peripheral on ice vision setups that I've seen from a defenseman in the last probably 20 to 30 years. Now, look, we're not just heaping praise on a guy for the sake of heaping praise on him. I mean, he has Paul Coffey-like vision where, I know he had Gretzky, Curry, all these absolutely just insane talents. But I will argue this from a 2021 standpoint, Makar may just have almost as many weapons at somewhat of a close level. And the scary part is this. Colorado is only going to get better and better. It just comes down to goaltending with them. That's it. If that goaltending stays healthy and stays stable enough, I see maybe not this year, but at some point very soon, that's a team that could raise Lord Stanley's Cup.
Yeah, definitely. They've hit the bumps in the road this year, but great trajectory, especially when you start seeing the big multi-point games from Kadri and Burakovsky and Saad chipping in again. The second line has looked great over the past 2 weeks and has them trending back high in pursuit of the Stanley Cup for sure. But Chris, thanks so much for joining us, man. Great show as always. Great picks. Follow him at Chris Wassel DFS. Thanks, buddy.
Thank you, guys.
All right. So for Chris Wassel, Rob Reese, Pete Jensen, we'll be back with you, me and Robbie, on Friday. Hit us up at NHL Fantasy with all your questions on Twitter and Instagram, and we'll check back with you then.